This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're staying on the surface of the planet Earth, talking about paying for rocket boosters, paying for trips into low Earth orbit and to the moon, paying for them with the contracts that were familiar to the 20th century in big space. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black, is here to explain. This is Follow the Money, and that tells you a great deal about NASA's success once upon a time and SpaceX and its colleagues in commercial space success now. Bob, a very good evening to you. What is a fixed price contract? Thank you.
Good evening, John. This is probably the most fundamental legalistic in the weeds piece of information that any of your listeners should have about what has worked at NASA and what has not over the last half century. There are two kinds of contracts that the government issues, and traditionally, long before the space program, everything was a fixed price contract, which makes perfect sense. It's how everyone functions. You're going to buy a product from any contractor, or they're going to do anything for you. You get an agreement ahead of time of how much it's going to cost, period, and that's it. And they have to get the job done. There might be penalty fees, and there might be awards, bonuses if they do things better, but it's always a fixed price, so everyone knows where they stand, and everyone now has an incentive to do it well. When the space program started, though, in the 60s, NASA faced a problem, which is they were asking aerospace companies to build something that had never been built before and do it under a very quick timeline. It wasn't like the airline industry building things over time and selling them to customers. This was a case where they had to get it up quickly because they were racing the Soviets to the moon. And so they were asking companies to build new things and fixed price contracts. The companies balked. They said, look, things could go wrong here and we suddenly could be in the hole and we can't afford it. And so we're not going to bid. And so they came up with something called the cost plus contract, which is whatever the cost is going to be, even if it goes up, the government, NASA, will pick up the cost and always give the contractor a 10% profit on top of the cost. And, of course, in the 60s, that worked because there was a race and it was competition, and there was also more ethics involved, and you didn't yet have the military-industrial complex running things. And so they did things well and didn't really cheat NASA or the government or the taxpayer, private contractors. And NASA itself demanded the contractors work fast, even in a cost-plus situation. But after that, things got lazy over the next 50 years. And so what you had happen is you'd have contractors sign contracts with NASA, such as with SLS and Orion, where they have a cost-plus contract where they had, like, Lockheed Martin. Its original contract was, like, $5 billion. In the end, NASA has spent with Lockheed Martin, I'd say, almost a dozen billion dollars, almost 2.5 times that, to get basically the same number of capsules, maybe 5 or 6 capsules. It's like ludicrous. And same thing with SLS. The original contract was in the $5 or $6 billion, and it's now going up to like $25 billion. And in the meantime, things get delayed endlessly because NASA, every change order it puts through, the government, the company can demand things. So the result is that cost-plus contracts are a failure. And what happened in the last decade is that NASA, and I had recommended this in my policy paper in 2017, Capitalism Space, I had said that they stop giving out cost-plus contracts. And the Trump administration agreed with that. They're not so much from my policy, but they decided the same thing. We should no longer give out cost-plus contracts. It'll all be fixed price. And SpaceX has demonstrated that it works. Without any question, they've demonstrated that it works because you get a lot of bang for the buck for relatively little money. And Boeing has demonstrated that it works, too, because even though its Starliner capsule has failed to launch and Boeing's had to eat a lot of money, getting close to $1 billion worth, the government hasn't had to pay for those problems. It's Boeing's problem. Boeing should be delivering. It puts incentive on the company to do a good job. Well, here's where the story is. I mean, the NASA official who's been put in charge of the entire manned program at NASA, which includes Artemis going back to the moon, names is Jim Free. He gave a talk about a week ago at the Space Studies Board in Washington, as part of the National Science Foundation. And in this appearance, he expressed, I already talked about this before, how he was worried about the FAA's regulatory framework with SpaceX, and it might delay Starship, and NASA needs Starship. But he said something else that Eric Berger at Ars Technica noticed that I missed, which is, and let me quote, this is free speaking, "The fact is, if they're not flying, and that's SpaceX, if SpaceX is not flying on the time they said, it does us no good to have a firm fixed-price contract other than we're not paying more." In other words, he's kind of implying that he'd be better off with a cost-plus contract because he would have, I guess, more pressure on SpaceX. I can't imagine that. I don't know why. Berger says this guy comes out of the cost-plus swamp in Washington. He's what he's used to, and that's what he would like. The way I see it is just another example of the administrative state in D.C. fighting back from independent commercial space. Independent commercial space means the government doesn't own anything. It doesn't control anything. It merely buys products off the public-private sector. And so they're not in control. They don't have power. They don't like that. And so I think this is just an indication there's a real threat to the future, this new renaissance that's been developed entirely by private space in the American space effort. It's really now under serious risk because it does appear that not only does the Biden administration going after Elon Musk because they don't like him politically, but the administrative state wants power and is talking about trying to shift things to a way where they'll have more control and power.
SpaceX launches an Indonesian broadband satellite. China launches a classified experimental satellite. Compare and contrast, Bob.
Yes, these are two launches that occurred earlier this week from China and SpaceX. And, you know, I keep a track of every launch that goes on so we can see who's doing well and where the trends are. What was interesting about these two launches is that China launched a classified experimental satellite. Their state-run press basically told us zero about what that classified experimental satellite is, other than it's going to test new technology to look at the Earth. Look at the Earth. I wonder what they're looking at. They also didn't tell us whether or not the rocket's first stage, which is a Long March 6, crashed near any habitable areas. It did launch from an interior spaceport, and of course that first stage will crash somewhere. And they said recently they tried parachutes to control the descent and reduce the possibility of hitting habitable areas. They didn't tell us if they did that or not. And then SpaceX, meanwhile, it launched this Indonesian broadband satellite using a Falcon 9 from Cape Canaveral. The first stage completed its 12th flight, landing safely on a drone ship in the Atlantic. Both fairing halves completed their 7th and 9th flights, respectively. We basically know everything that was being done on this flight. There's no secrecy. And the big issue here has to do with that launch race. Who's doing the most? Right now, SpaceX has 41 total launches, and China has 24. And SpaceX, of course, leads in the United States as general private enterprise, leads the world in launches 46 to 24. That's China, but the whole world 46 to 40 launches. But what's more significant is SpaceX all by itself is leading the rest of the world, excluding American companies, 41 launches to 40. One American company has more launches than the entire rest of the world combined. And that just demonstrates, once again, private enterprise. If you and fixed-price contracts, by the way. Everything SpaceX does is on a fixed-price contract. They don't have any cost-plus. They got to get it done with the amount of money at hand, and that's an incentive. So that's exactly what they do. They get it done on the money at hand, and the result is that they get a lot of customers and a lot of business, and they make a lot of money.
We go to Russia. SR Space. What is it?
This is Russia's attempt to emulate the Chinese method of creating what I call pseudo private companies to make a competitive aerospace business. Now, in Russia, everything in the aerospace industry is owned and controlled by Roscosmos, which is a government corporation. So everything is consolidated into basically a state-run, top-down, Soviet-style, communist government-run space industry. But there's a private company, supposedly, in Russia called SR Space that is developing its own private orbital rocket to compete with Roscosmos. And they have completed two suborbital launches, to small suborbital launches, but those did not reach suborbital space. They're now putting together the rocket to do their first suborbital launch that would get up into space at least. And their goal eventually is to make a rocket that would be able to reach orbit and launch satellites. And this is Russia's attempt to emulate the Chinese, have lots of pseudo-private companies that get private investment capital bid for contracts with the government and therefore keep the costs down and innovate against each other. But like China, this is not going to be a private company. It's run completely by the government. It's dictated what it can do by the government. And the Chinese, at least, have been somewhat successful in having independent companies. The Russians have not. The one example previously was a company called S7, which was going to take the Sea launch platform and launch its own rockets. The government basically said, nice business you got there. I think we'll take it over. And they did. They shut it down, basically. So I think that will happen in Russia.
Rocket Lab, commercial space. Looks like a positive report, Bob.
Yes, this is very positive for the company and any shareholders in Rocket Lab. It's pretty amazing. The military wants to do hypersonic test launches. And so for the last 3 years, Stratolaunch has been offering and has gotten a contract with the military to use its ROC airplane and a Talon hypersonic test vehicle to do hypersonic tests. And they've been building up doing test flights of ROC. They have not yet ready to do any hypersonic tests. This started in late 2020. Rocket Lab in April said, look, we'll reconfigure our Electron orbital rocket to do suborbital flights. And they got a contract from the military. And 2 months later, this last week, they did a suborbital test launch of Electron. It was not an orbital launch. It was designed to show the military that they could do a suborbital launch, that a hypersonic test payload could be put on and do hypersonic tests. And it's part of a contract they've gotten, and they did this very fast. They leapfrogged that Stratolaunch like in months, 2 months. And so they're now ready to launch a payload as part of this program to do hypersonic test flights for the military. And there's another company that's building the payload, and we expect this could happen any month now, John.
PLD, remind us, Bob.
PLD is a Spanish startup rocket company, launches in Spain, hasn't launched yet, though. It was attempting its first suborbital test launch of its Miura 1 rocket. This is a suborbital rocket that would give them test data for building their orbital rocket. They already have a contract with Ariane Space that if they get an orbital rocket, they can make some business money. They have investment capital. They have a spaceport launch site in Spain. To do their first suborbital flight of the Miura 1 rocket, suborbital rocket, this past weekend. But shortly before T-minus zero, they aborted the launch because some of the umbilical fuel and power lines failed to disconnect as planned at the moment they should have. And so rather than launch and fail, they aborted the launch so they can fix things and try again. This is part of this new renaissance of launch, John. It's very exciting.
Puzzle, Bob, about the NASA official who talked about cost plus and fixed price. Does that connect in any fashion to the wait for Starship to get clearance to launch right now, what we're waiting for? We have 30 seconds.
I think it's tied in because I think the administrative state in D.C. is finding a number of ways to squelch private enterprise. And so Jim Free talking about cost plus means he wants to put the government back in control of contracts in a way that will make the contract is the mercy of NASA, and the FAA regulatory restrictions are a way to slow down independence by private companies.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going to the moon. An unusual offer by the People's Republic of China. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bauch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.